You are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble.
Hello and welcome to episode 17 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And we've got a lot of things discussed this week, from Dizzy returning to lots of Spielbergness to Bioshock Infiniteness to what our main feature is, which is actually what our favourite childhood animation / cartoons were. But first up, Dizzy has returned as a Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah. I'm happy about that. I like Dizzy the Egg when I was little. Mm. Dizzy Treasure Island was epic. It was bloody insane to complete, but it was epic.
I've never personally played any of the Dizzy games. I just remember watching Paul play some of them through for a retrospective he once wrote for Beef Jack.
Well, what can I say? It was a very unusual type of game for its time.
Yes.
So, I mean, I've kind of read articles on it since, and apparently it never used to be an egg. It used to be just like a face and like with arms and legs. And basically that was because of the limitation of graphics on consoles at the time. You can't really, you know, make something that's, you know, cartoony, you know, with like big, bold features without kind of doing that kind of thing. So,
but I mean, sorry, I was going to say, it is the Oliver Twins developing it.
Yay.
And
that's a positive.
Yeah,
yes, it is, definitely.
With Blitz Games, and looking through the description on the Kickstarter page, apart from the fact that they're looking for $350,000 to bring Dizzy to iOS and PC, they've also said that it looks like there's going to be an 8-bit mode for the game.
Yeah. Which is cool.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely...
Now, which 8-bit? I demand to know which 8-bit.
They did not specify which kind of 8-bit.
It's the Amstrad 8-bit.
Is it?
Ah, sucks.
Whoa. Yeah, there was a Dizzy game on the Nintendo Entertainment System, so...
There was, yes. There was also on the Sega Master System.
And they did one for the Mega Drive, didn't they? They did the whole collection.
They did, but it started off as ZX Spectrum.
Mm.
Yes.
And later got converted over to Amstrad CPC and Commodore 64.
I think the Spectrum version is the only one that I've actually seen being played.
That's the only one that I've played. Well,
sure?
I think I've had a go on like a Mega Drive. It's mostly the ZX Spectrum.
Yeah. Also came out on the ST and Commodore Amiga as well. But... I will just say that bloody egg, which is how I know Dizzy. But that's mostly because I was going around, this was round about the PlayStation era, and I was going around a lot of the charity shops where people were offloading their old 8-bit computer collections and just picking up these big collections that people had obviously, you know, spent years putting together and picking them up for far too cheap, really, if I'm honest. And you would not believe how many copies of Dizzy I own.
Really?
Yeah. Everyone seemed to have the complete collection and separate tapes. And it's like, oh my God.
Because it was a cult classic.
I could build a house with Dizzy.
That was probably, Dizzy was probably one of the first platforming heroes, to be fair.
Yeah. I'd agree with that, actually.
Does he predate Mario then? Technically.
Oh, yeah, because he must,
No, he doesn't.
Doesn't he?
No, because Mario was, Super Mario Brothers was about 85, 86, that kind of. Dizzy was around about 87, 88.
Yeah.
And also Dizzy, I think personally, I don't know if anyone else would back me up, but I think Dizzy... also harks back to the Magic Knight games, which were similar sort of pick an item up, take it somewhere else on the flip screen, use it for a puzzle, that kind of thing. Those were also budget games. So,
true.
Yeah. The Dizzy games were good, and they were absolutely fantastic value when you think about
it. I picked mine up for $4.99 a tape, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were great value.
So they were absolutely killer for that. But yeah, I'm sick to the sight of the tapes.
care to hand someone a competition sometime?
Maybe I'd have to have a look to see if I've still got spares.
Mm.
I knew I have several of them, but whether I actually have them at hand and still with me since I've moved house twice since then is another matter, but yeah.
For some of us less retro savvy individuals in on this call and our listeners,
younger.
Okay. Which was the Dizzy game that was actually incompletable or something?
That was Spellbound Dizzy on the 48K Spectrum. And I think I've discussed this before.
Yeah, I love hearing about it.
Where there's a glitch where, part of the game was meant to, you used to, like, speak to a leprechaun to get, like Aqualung or something like that.
Yeah.
And on the 48K version, the conversation didn't actually start.
Oops.
Yeah. Awesome.
Great.
Out of memory error.
Does not compute.
Such a magical soundtrack.
They were really, really just sort of dancey, jolly, lippy things. So,
for me, it was one of the first platform games I ever played. So, it's always got a place in my heart. I did download the one that Codemasters released for the iOS.
Oh, yeah, because that was like a reskinned.
Yeah, that
was a reskinned one, but the controls weren't that great on it. I found the controls a bit stupid.
Mm.
Well, they weren't stupid, it was just you couldn't really jump anywhere.
I
was waiting to see if it was going to... I'll have to say, hand on heart, I don't know if it came out on Android, because if it did...
Come out on Android, yeah.
I believe
it. If it supported the Xperia Play controls, I might have a look. But that bloody egg.
That would have been pretty cool, actually.
I was wondering about the kind of spin-offs, because they did stuff like Dizzy Down the Rapids, Fat Food Dizzy, and I loved Quick Snacks.
What?
I don't think I ever actually managed to fully complete it, but yeah, quite enjoyed it, which was a completely different type of game to the main series.
Okay.
It was.
Totally different.
Okay.
A bit like Dr. Mario and things like that, wasn't it? Yeah. It was just a Dizzy game to get people to look at it.
Yeah.
Okay, I think I'm gonna move us on now. So other bit of big gaming, to me it's big, and actually to anyone who's fans of the series it's big. There will be no multiplayer in Bioshock Infinite. Ken Levine confirmed this via the Twitter in the last sort of few days. It's brilliant news. It's fabulous news. I love Bioshock. I actually really like Bioshock 2, but as somebody who wrote a complete walkthrough through the game, I'm not sure if the reason I love Bioshock 2 is due to a form of Stockholm Syndrome. I loved the first two games, and the multiplayer in 2 is just duh. So, yeah.
I am really pleased by this.
I've got to say, I'm really pleased with it, because I like Bioshock as a single-player game. There's no need to add that multiplayer. It's a bit like Dead Space 2.
Mm.
I didn't really like going into multiplayer. Just concentrate on the narrative. I want the single player game. Leave it alone.
Yeah. I think even dating back to like games of the N64 era, there was a lot of sticking in four players just because you could. And because it kind of worked with GoldenEye.
Yeah.
And GoldenEye was an interesting one because the single player game was actually completed, and then they had some spare time. So they stuck on the multiplayer, tacked it on right at the very end, and it was the best thing about the game.
Yeah.
Best thing since sliced bread.
Pretty much, yeah.
But no, I'm really excited about the fact that there isn't multiplayer, because it's something that detracts from the development of the single player game, but the Bioshock games are all about immersion. Yeah. And if there's something that's detracting away from the development of that, which is, to me, what multiplayer does when you add it into a game. I mean, the only game so far that I've played where, in the last few years, where multiplayer's worked, having been kind of tacked on, is the multiplayer for Mass Effect 3.
I quite enjoy that, to be fair, the Mass Effect 3, if you get a good bunch of people to play with, yeah.
But that's only because you're using really, you've got such a range of abilities and stuff that you can use. I would say that the amount of modes available is somewhat limited, but they certainly went to town with abilities.
Yeah. Oh, I'll say I've not played the multiplayer. I'm fine with it existing, I suppose. But it's just, why does it count towards the galactic readiness?
Yeah. That is a bit...
That winds me up something chronic.
I think it's
I'm on my third playthrough of Mass Effect 3 now.
Hmm.
Third. And I'm stuck at 50%.
I think it's a sneaky way of trying to get you to kind of like do everything that there is in the game.
And get you hooked into the multiplayer as well, possibly.
Because there is money involved in multiplayer because of the fact that you can obviously spend actual Microsoft points to buy equipment and stuff for your online experience.
I mean, to be fair...
I know, but I just don't understand why on a game which takes you about 35, 40 hours to complete, it's a single player, strong narrative RPG, why... Ooh, we've got multiplayer in it now. And that's precisely what I didn't want them doing with Bioshock 2. And that's why I'm so pleased that there's no multiplayer in Bioshock Infinite. Co-op is a different matter entirely. Co-op, it's going through the narrative.
Yeah, I would prefer if they wanted you to play with mates online or whatever, and I think it would work perfectly in Mass Effect 3, just put co-op in it. Enjoy the narrative with your friends and just build it up.
It would have been interesting to be able to actually have a fourth member of your party and actually having all four players, you know, actually going onto the single player modes.
Definitely.
The thing is with co-op, it does work quite well. I mean, Paul and I keep trying to find games that we can play cooperatively together, basically. And essentially, the only reason we liked Resident Evil 5 was because of the co-op mode.
Is fairly dullish game. Well, same with 6, to be fair. It's fairly
Six has got that frustrating factor there as well.
Yeah.
Which you've been revisiting this past day. But yeah, so co-op would be something like, so multiplayer, no, but co-op is something that I would prefer found its way into games a bit more often. And certainly co-op that you can also play on the same console.
Yeah, the system link is fine if it's up to, you know, if it has to be. It shouldn't require live gold or anything like that.
Yeah.
No.
But yeah, split screen, co-op, that's the thing to go for. Ever since the original Halo.
I mean, I suppose that was the only reason that we got through the original game, because we've never completed the original game. We got to the last, was it where you run for your life? As everything crashes down around you. We got to that bit and we kept dying on that, so we kind of left it. But the only reason we got through most of the game, I think, is because we were playing together.
Yeah.
I think if I'd been playing it by myself, I would have died a death of boredom and given up on it.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, most of the Halos I've actually completed in co-op.
I think I prefer it when gaming is actually more of a social experience. I mean, I'm not talking like competitive play, but when it's kind of you're working together with the whole, you know, whole thing, co-op.
And I mean, I know you didn't necessarily like it that much, but I liked to a certain extent when, you know, you're kind of working together, but you're not necessarily, you know, next to each other the entire time. Like in Resident Evil 6, you know, there's bits where you kind of part ways for a little bit and kind of help you.
Right, I'm back now.
Welcome back.
I think my rage overloaded Skype.
Okay. So it's great that multiplayer's gone, but maybe sometime, if somebody could make a Bioshock that's got co-op,
that would be mega.
It would be very mega. I mean, and it's considering the way Bioshock works, it's not like you'd even have to have two characters that are remotely the same.
No.
You know, you could have a good mixture going on.
Can you imagine? Yeah. Right. One player plays as a big daddy, the other player plays as a little sister.
That would
little
be
sister thing. Having to sneak around places. And
but I mean that. Whatnot. I mean that depends what's going on, because I can't remember at the end of two, is Rapture gone? I really can't remember because it's been so long.
I think part of the lab is gone with the big sisters.
Yeah, but I mean, Infinite. Have we actually seen anything that looks like, you know, Big Daddy's and little sisters at all? Because I've only seen stuff that looks far more clean, less hellish.
I haven't seen anything yet.
There are the sort of large, slightly Big Daddy-esque robot things, you know, steam powered robots.
Yeah.
Okay.
But other than that, no. Apart from some absolutely awesome trailers that make me want.
I think we'll move on to our next piece. Apparently it was revealed in a recent interview that Steven Spielberg was actually turned down for directing a James Bond film back in the 70s. Apparently Spielberg went to one of the producers at the time, Albert Broccelli.
Broccoli.
No, it's not broccoli. It's probably Italian name. It wouldn't sound like
broccoli.
Broccoli. Asking if he could direct, and Petrelli said no, basically.
Fair enough.
I mean, I suppose technically at the time Steven Spielberg was at the earlier end of his career. I mean, when was Jaws released?
Wasn't that?
What, 77?
77, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was either 77 or 79.
So it might... I'm not sure if it's pre or post Jaws that this denial happened, but it is interesting that he actually did want to direct a James Bond film, and apparently he's really liked Skyfall, which I'm so far refusing to see unless it's on DVD or Blu-ray, because if I'm going to fall asleep during a film, I don't want to do it in the cinema. I remind people I have managed to fall asleep during Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace, so I have form for this.
Quantum of Solace, I can understand.
Yeah,
I quite enjoyed Quantum of Solace.
Yeah, well, I still managed to do it through Casino Royale, so yeah.
That is impressive.
Yeah, I can't be trusted to watch these films where not only have I paid more than £7 for a ticket, I've probably paid you know, at least a fiver for some popcorn and a drink. I can't be trusted one bit.
I think it's quite interesting that you wanted to direct it, but I think it's probably a good thing that he was turned down. I don't know if he'd have done as much of the stuff that he's done if he was, because he would have been quite busy doing
that's true
more Bond films, you know, covering the Roger Moore and stuff. So would we have had E.T., would we have had Indiana Jones? He was involved with Indiana Jones, wasn't he?
I think we would have had more Bizarre Gadgets.
Yeah. Really? Oh, yeah, we'd have definitely had more Bizarre Gadgets. We might have had a robot transforming into a car and stuff as well.
Would have had a gadget which would have made a giant stone boulder appear behind the bad guy and just roll down the corridor after him. That would have been good.
That would have been cool.
This is the aim of all films that have his influence. There must be something huge and peril-filled.
It's
dodging.
It's either that or have a scene where James Bond, basically, in his tuxedo, just opens one flap and melts the face of the bad guy.
Mm. Yeah, I can...
Unless he keeps his eyes closed.
Unless he keeps his eyes closed. Totally.
So.
That could work, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds far more plausible than Moonraker. Yeah, it could have worked.
Oh, God.
No, you're talking specifically about Bond, was it the 007 Legends? Is that the one that came out recently?
Oh, yeah.
I've
heard that's terrible.
Yeah, it's been panned. And I think one of the films they included was Moonraker. And it's like, of all the Bond films out of the seven, I think it's seven they included, that you decided to revisit. With Daniel Craig, I might add, playing the face of Bond, you went for Moonraker.
It's a bit daft.
They like big rockets and they cannot lie.
I think, to be fair, the only Bond game I really liked is GoldenEye.
I never played it, but I used to enjoy my younger brother playing through Tomorrow Never Dies. That did look quite fun. It didn't. That was on the PlayStation. It didn't necessarily much going for it for multiplayer, but the main story of it seemed quite interesting.
It was a bit weird when they did the like game only stuff, like the James Bond games that weren't actually based on movies. I can't remember.
They are just so memorable.
Was it Agent Under Fire? Or
Yeah, that was
one of them, but there were a few with sort of more Bond-esque names.
Yeah.
And I cannot for the life of me remember any.
That's probably for the best.
They're just immemorable.
Yeah.
You know, you just can't remember it.
Bond shooting some guys in exotic locations.
Yeah. I know on Steam, I think there's actually like a modding community that has modded Halo. Not Halo, Half-Life 2.
Yes.
So that you can actually play multiplayer GoldenEye and Dark over.
Oh yeah.
But I mean, you were quite disappointed by the rehash they did of GoldenEye that they released last year.
Well, yeah, that's because it was like they took GoldenEye.
Did you play the reversion or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They took GoldenEye, the original N64 classic. And they slapped on a little bit of modern first-person shooter syndrome.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And it was great.
I enjoyed the multiplayer on the Wii. Online.
They
actually worked quite well.
But.
Yeah.
It's not original N64 GoldenEye, I think, is our issue here. it's not like the graphics are anything amazing to behold. But it's an enjoyable game.
It is, definitely. But, yeah, that's still one of the best Bond games I've ever played, to be fair. I played the platforming one that came out on the Mega Drive. With a job in it.
Live and Let Die was good on the 64. There we go. That's my contribution.
What was that? Commodore 64?
Yeah.
Okay.
Never go around.
Oh, yeah, I should say, shouldn't I? If the Commodore 64 and the N64. Yeah, Commodore 64.
It could all get very confusing very quickly.
I was like, have I stepped into an alternate reality here?
why would anyone make a game for that console when the film's like... where was Live and Let Die?
1979, 1981, something like that.
Yeah, it was an odd choice at the time because this was years later on the 64. It wasn't, you know, at the time or, you know, as close as possible. It was just, why are they doing that one? As it turned out, it's because they had a nice sort of 3D racing engine.
Oh, and wasn't there From Russia with Love as well? That was like on the Xbox 360, I think.
Yes, with Sean Connery. Yes, because Sean Connery actually, they did liken the face to it, didn't they?
Mm.
Yeah, that was all right. That wasn't too bad. Yeah.
From his Scottish tax exile.
Yeah, it was nothing to write home about. The jetpack level was quite good fun.
Going back to the fact that Spielberg was actually turned down for a directing role for James, well, I say turned down, it wasn't necessarily up at the time. He just asked, could I direct?
Nope.
I do feel that perhaps he would have missed out on some classic bits of cinema, as you've said, if he'd got tied down to the Bond franchise, considering how many films they were kind of trying to put out back then.
Yeah, definitely.
Moving on.
Do we have to?
Yes.
Why?
Why? Because I enjoy you being in pain. That's why. Because...
I didn't even know about this until you told me.
Merlin, the BBC TV series, is ending. The current season is officially the last season. It's all ending with the two-parter that they're going to be doing. Is it over Christmas? It's the last one.
All I'm going to say to that is they bloody better let Merlin come out of the closet and actually show off that he's a magician.
I
was going to say, is that a different series? Have I missed something?
Maybe I should rephrase that better, but, you know, they should really show Merlin actually showing off to Arthur that he can sorcery is good and everything else like that, because I think that's possibly been going on for a little bit too long now. All the hidden.
It's because the few times that I've sort of tuned in when it's been on, and it's just been like, seriously, They don't know. They haven't even guessed yet. Oh, come on.
You know? I know. It's...
It's perhaps potentially as bad as the Clark Kent glasses situation.
What's wrong with that? Glasses obviously change your persona. Definitely.
Or tuxedo mask in Sailor Moon. I mean...
Hang on, what? Spoiler?
Sailor Moon's been out for like... Oh, God, it must be more than 20.
Yes, I know. It's yeah, I have been exposed to the entire thing.
Wait, have you been exposed to the entire thing with it actually...
With 200 episodes of
is
it.
Is this before... Is this the actual Japanese version or what the...
Yes, yeah, fan-subbed.
Fan-subbed, yeah, because what the Americans did to it messed up a whole load of the storylines. So
yeah, everyone going on holiday,
and
they always do with animes,
and relationships being completely either ignored, cut out, or reimagined in some way. Anyway, getting back to so Merlin is ending. I'm sorry, Cookie, but I don't feel this is any great loss to British television.
No, I enjoy it. I didn't enjoy the first couple of seasons, but the last sort of two or three I've really enjoyed.
I have to say,
you masochistically stayed with it.
I didn't. I did stop watching it sort of half season one, and then I went to my mum's in Norfolk, and they were watching it, and I was like, really? Do we have to? And then I was like, oh, I'm going to have to watch next week, because that was a bit of a cliffhanger. Bugger. And I've watched it ever since.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm not exactly losing any sleep over it personally, because I have watched it, but I'm just hoping that they have at least something to replace it. Something.
Of course they have. They'll have Strictly ice dancing.
I mean something decent.
Well, basically, you want the BBC to make sure they actually have some original sort of drama or drama fantasy or something for family audiences on a Saturday night.
Or sci-fi.
I mean, Doctor Who, when's Who properly coming back?
Christmas.
That's probably why it's ending.
Yeah, but I mean...
Well, you know, as in the end of this series, not as in ending. You know, not like, you know, the Doctor travels back through time and kills its creator or something.
Hang on, actually, the Doctor was Merlin, though, wasn't he, in Battlefield?
Mm.
Maybe that's what's happened.
Oh, yes.
He was, yeah.
He's got to get back to that TARDIS.
Yes.
Oh, speaking of... did Anthony Horowitz ever write Doctor Who episodes at all? Ever, like, old or new? Because...
Good question.
Either that or he's a Who fan, because as I posted on Facebook at the weekend, Paul and I've been watching Crime Traveller, which is this really cheesy time-travelling series from the BBC that was made in 97 with, what's his name, French?
Oh, Michael French and Chloe Annett.
Yeah, and it was created by Anthony Horowitz. And in one episode, there's this guy who's selling converted red telephone boxes, and the camera outside where the sort of the workshop is just pans to the left, and there in amongst all the red phone boxes is a blue,
would there be a blue
police
one?
Box. And I was just like, you know, are we actually considering what Horowitz is like? Was he actually having a nod to Doctor Who?
I don't think he ever did it, but Of course, if you're doing a time traveling series on the BBC, everyone was just shouting at the screen, "Why can't it be Doctor Who?"
Oh, the 90s, where we were denied Who, except for that one comic relief special.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
No, actually, but saying that, it might be because we might have a few extra Doctor Who's next year for the 50th anniversary.
That would be nice. But at the same
time, the rumor is that David Tennant might be coming back.
Ooh, a few.
Oh, well.
For a special one-off with Matt Smith, going with Legend, because you had the three Doctors, and then you had the five Doctors.
As soon as I heard about this, I thought, well, he's a time traveler. It's perfectly possible for him to meet himself.
Yeah,
they have done it with Tennant and Peter Davidson in Comic Relief.
Yeah.
So there is a precedent, even if they were, you know, trying to completely ignore the old Who.
Yeah.
As in the good Who.
But no, I think it'd be quite cool if they did that.
Yeah, I've got no problem with that. And with Merlin, the whole thing is, I have no idea what the budget is for that series, but the thing that irks me about it is not so much Merlin, it's the fact that they could be spending that money better.
I do feel that it is perhaps lacking somewhat in the writing department.
Yeah.
Maybe the acting, but then the acting could in fact be affected by the directing. So I don't know who's responsible there.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it the same production company that did the Robin Hood series? There's a very, very similar vibe to it.
That would explain a lot. What, you mean as in terrible vibe?
Hey.
There hasn't been a TV series since Maid Marian and her Merry Men?
And her Merry Men.
Yeah, there hasn't been.
Which was awesome.
You can't be the original Robin Hood, though, can you? Robin Hood of Sherwood, what it was called. Back in the...
DC original Robin Hood? What, the Errol Flynn?
Oh, no. You know, with a theme tune done by Clannad. Robin the Hooded Man. That was awesome.
Yeah, that was a good series. Although that was also a little bit, you know, if you look back at it now, because it's been repeated on UK Gold.
Yeah, I still watch it, and I still quite enjoy it.
I think we owe it to our listeners now to move away from this and announce who the winners are of the Telecost Protocol competition that we've been running for the last.
And for the answer to that, we'll be back right after the break.
No.
I'm sorry.
Just... No.
How many got sponsorship messages or something first?
I want my PS3, damn it.
we had a few entries. It was actually nice actually having to meticulously look through interactions on Twitter to find out who had A, retweeted the tweet that we had, and B, had followed both us and Telecost Protocol. And managed to, with a random list generator thing, pick five winners. So the winners are Chris Jacobs, Dalif Angaharad, Nathan Bale, Jedi Junkie, Wolgpurgus117. I will be getting in touch with you soon about handing over your digital copies of the comic. This is basically going to involve me DMing you. And then email addresses, you know, and PDFs, basically. So keep an ear out.
Congratulations.
Congratulations
for correctly following through the procedure.
Yes.
Because we had a couple of entries that didn't. Now, to the main feature of what we want to talk to this week. We want to talk about cartoon animated series of our childhoods. Basically, the reason we talk about this is because I discovered at the weekend that Warner have recently made the Fleischer Studios Superman cartoons available on YouTube.
Ooh, awesome.
Yeah, which I'm hoping to include a link for. And basically, the style and stuff reminds me of one of my very favourite animated series from when I was a kid. However, before we get to our favourites, I thought we'd go through some of the tweets that we had saying what other people's favourites were for animated series. And animated also includes still animation, in case anyone's wondering. Though most of us are gone with cartoons. So we had Battle of the Planets from David McGuire.
Which was awesome.
Yes.
It was awesome.
Zeke.
Yeah. And G-Force as well.
Zeke Eden said Sharky and George.
Remember the theme?
Sharky and George, Crambusters of the Sea.
How old were you when that was on? Yeah. I'm just wondering, because I was a kid when that was on. So were you like a teenager as me?
I may have been about 13. And I still watch cartoons to this day. And
Fair enough.
Zeph Ward, one of the main editors for Games Fiends, said he used to love Trapdoor.
Oh, and I could do the voice for that as well.
Go on, man.
Go for it.
Bert, open that trapdoor. Feed me. Worms.
Yeah.
Rob McKay said that he used to really love Rescue Rangers and Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles.
I have to say, you know, with the whole Rescue Rangers and Chip and Dale and whatnot, whenever my mum used to say anything about Chip and Dale, so I didn't realise that they were men stripping. I thought they were actually, you know, like, I think I can remember, you know, saying to mum, oh, mum, can
all,
I?
All the girls love the chipmunks.
The Rescue Rangers were cool, though, weren't they?
Yeah. Chris Jacobs, it was another one for Battle of the Planets, which is a series that I know of and have never seen anything.
Oh, it's with. Brilliant.
DG said, well, he basically gave this long list, and I explained that each of us has actually chosen one. He's like, God, how the heck did you manage to do that? And he said, Mask.
Is that the original Mask with Matt? Oh, what's Matt Tracker?
Oh, with all the.
With the they used to have masks on. They had the cars that would turn sort of, the baddies with Venom, they were mask. The leader of Venom had a helicopter that turned into a jet plane called Switchblade, and the mask had abilities.
It's the original series because he's gone on to list Galaxy Rangers, Jason the Wheeled Warriors, and Dragon Ball. I have to admit, Galaxy Rangers and Jason the Wheeled Warriors, I have never heard of.
Hey,
for really? Shame.
Ooh, Galaxy Rangers, that was cool. Jason the Wheeled Warriors was epic.
I think it's a little bit. I mean, I only just about remember Mask when repeats of Mask used to be on. I was very little. Like, I was probably about maybe 3, maybe 4.
I actually had Boulder Mountain, the headquarters of Mask. The toys.
Yeah,
I used to have all the toys and stuff.
Condescendingly patted on the head by people.
You must have had some as well, Retroid, surely.
Of what? Sorry.
Of the Mask toys.
I was just sitting here thinking, oh hell, I forgot about this and I forgot about that. And anyway, yeah, sorry. Anyway, yes. Hello.
Didn't you have any of the toys, a mask?
Yeah.
No, I had some friends who did. I collected Transformers and things like that.
Fair dues.
Yeah. Okay, our final two cartoons that were nominated were from Peter Cooper, who's the guy that wrote Telecos Protocol, who we had on the show a few weeks ago. And he said Dexter's Laboratory and Rocco's Modern Life.
Got to admit, I did used to like Rocco's Modern Life.
I used to like his lab, so...
Yeah.
They're quite recent to me.
Yeah,
it's probably because I'm an old git.
Yeah, yeah. Peter is perhaps younger than yourself, Monsieur Retroid.
Got no right to be. He was on the podcast, he didn't call himself Paul, and now he's younger.
It's all going downhill from here.
It is.
Okay, but what are our favourite shows that we sort of like still hold quite dear? From our childhood. So I'm going to go first. And my favourite cartoon that I used to love watching was Batman, the animated series.
Was that from the 90s?
The 90s one. The one that had Dan DiDio as one of the main writers, the guy who created Harlequin and who wrote...
And I was going to say it was very good and it was responsible for Harlequin.
Yeah.
So...
And Mark Hamill was the Joker, wasn't he?
Yes.
Yep.
And obviously Dan DiDio, who's perhaps partially responsible for a lot of the new 52 mess that's going on at the moment, but he did write Batman Arkham Asylum and Batman Arkham City, so
and
I can forgive him.
And obviously the voice cast is kind of pretty much the same, apart from in the second one.
Yeah.
I believe was voiced by Tara Reid, is that correct?
I have no idea. I can't remember.
Well, Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
She was in the games.
Yeah. So, there's a whole load of the voice actors that were in the animated Batman, the animated series, actually made it into the recent games. Why do I like Batman, the animated series? Well, it's the fact that it's got that whole kind of like Art Deco thing going on. Because I've always been somebody, even as a kid, I used to like really nice architecture. That's what happens when you've got a dad like mine who designs buildings.
Yeah, so there's a reason for the snobbishness.
Yeah. I really like the Art Deco science. And in a way, it Batman actually sort of like seemed to have a bit of characterization going on about him. There was a bit of depth. I did like that. Like how he was like, yeah, his parents have died. Yes, he's fighting crime. But oh, look, he has a slightly dodgy face when he's, because we rewatched an episode earlier before doing this, which was about Catwoman managing to not be sentenced to to jail time. And there's just this like one bit where Batman's just kind of overseeing her after she's got hurt or something. And there's just a look like she's not like Catwoman. Oops, she's Selina at that point anyway. She's like, oh, what? Like, so interested me in stuff. And
yeah, and Batman turns around after, you know, Catwoman says something and says, you must be delirious. And the smile that he has on his face at that time was just kind of very, very funny.
Yeah.
It was quite they managed to play really well with the characters, because if I remember watching the whole series from start to finish, there was always that little bit of intrigue between Selina and Batman and Catwoman.
Yeah.
But it's just the fact that it was almost like Batman was ready to take advantage.
Yeah.
just the odd smile.
Yeah, and that's a good thing in a way, because the fact that it had just that little bit of, just a little bit of sort of adult kind of thinking going on, which actually means when you watch it today, it's perhaps not as cheesy as some older kids shows. Not when you watch them when you're an adult.
To me, it's a fantastic example of something can be suitable for children, and it doesn't have to be written down to children.
No. And I always liked it because it was, to me, it was the comic books. The characters followed, well, not followed, but the characters did seem to be very similar to the comic book characters as well.
Well, certainly pre-comics book code sort of stuff,
You know, so I must admit, I really enjoyed that. But I actually enjoyed quite a bit Batman Beyond, was it, as well?
Yeah, that was quite good, the sort of the future one, which actually carried on, in a way, I think, from the animated series anyway. Yeah. And of course, I believe it's the Batman from the Batman the Animated Series. It's also the same Batman that occasionally features in the Justice League cartoons. So, yeah.
It's the same Batman in the new there's a new one with the young, with Robin and that sort of thing in the, is it Young Justice?
I don't know.
Yeah, I've been watching it. That's quite good as well. And it's got the same Batman.
And before we go to Paul's favourite cartoon of decades past.
Well, I'm kind of judging this from when I was a kid, the cartoon that I liked when I was a kid, which was the X-Men animated series in the 90s. And I say, you know, judging from when I was a kid, because, you know, I think it's the first two seasons on DVD and rewatched them. And yeah, they're not as good as I remember.
The cheese factor is on life support a little bit.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason why I liked X-Men the Animated Series is because I've always had like a fascination with kind of time travel and alternate dimensions and more kind of sci-fi stuff like that, and the X-Men kind of do that quite a bit.
Yeah, with Cable and everything. So that was
wasn't it quite heavily based on the comics?
Yes, it was, yeah.
That's what I thought.
Because they had the whole story arc to the Dark Phoenix in there, didn't they?
Yes.
They meet the Star Blazers, and Cyclops reunites with his father. And you also had the storyline of the Age of Apocalypse, and that sort of thing, where, as you said, Cable came back in time.
Cool. Having watched a lot of the animated series myself when I was a kid, I always made me wonder when they did the X-Men films, like why Apocalypse was never brought in. Just made me wonder a little bit. Interesting.
That would have been really cool.
Have you got anything else that you want to say about X-Men?
I mean, I think, because I remember that there was, like in the movies, there was obviously kind of a big period of time where like comic books were, you know, one side and Hollywood was the other.
Yeah.
And then I think there was a Generation X or something like that. That was kind of like an X-Men ripoff. And that was quite interesting. And then obviously the movies came, and then like all of the movies came.
Mm.
So and that's kind of when the deluge happened. And I think it was the X-Men, first X-Men film at least, that really broke it.
Yeah.
It broke its Hollywood.
It was done at the same time as the Spider-Man cartoon as well, which was quite good as well.
And they did, I do believe that's a Fantastic Four.
Yeah, there was well. Anne and yeah. Iron Man. And they used to...
The Fantastic Four used to be a little bit cheesier.
Yeah, but then they have Marvel. And it used to be the BBC that used to show it on Saturday mornings.
And then was it ITV that showed Batman?
Yeah, it was ITV that showed, because ITV have always had more of a relationship with Warner than BBC have. So so it was just kind of I used to like the X-Men series. I liked how they tied them in with the other cartoons that had gone at the time.
Yeah, that's true. There's like the odd episode. I think I remember one episode of Spider-Man where they gathered different versions of Spider-Man from different dimensions along with the characters from X-Men. It's like there was a Peter Parker from, you know, the regular universe. There was a Peter Parker that never actually got bitten by a spider and didn't actually have his powers. He just like wore the mask and whatnot. There was another spider that was actually kind of Venom. There was another spider man that had Doc Ock's legs arms and whatnot. And I would actually quite like to see that episode again.
Well, I don't know if it's in the first season or not, but we've got the first season or first two seasons on DVD?
Oh, I can't remember, but we definitely have the beginning of Spider-Man.
Actually, if I look across the room, the box is staring at me now.
Yay. Don't play me.
DVD box sets are saviours.
Oh, they are.
Do you know what? On Bright Stuff last week, there was a piece about whether or not people who collect box sets are box set snobs. And I was just like, what the heck? They didn't bring up any of the reasons for why Paul and I tend to buy box sets, which is when we refuse to subscribe to Sky. Two, we can't get Virgin down here anyway. And three, we don't like illegally downloading things. So if there's stuff that isn't on regular TV, we kind of have to get set basically.
And I mean, obviously there are certain advantages. I mean, when you watch a series, like a drama series on TV, you know, you do have to wait till the next week and whatnot. And there is a little bit of an excitement there, and it is kind of the way that it's been designed to kind of run. But watching them on box sets, you can just like sit there all day watching them and
Yeah,
it is fantastic.
It's also far more productive to when I'm trying to knit, when I can actually pause if something critical is going on with the knitting and just quickly sort it out and then continue. I mean, okay, you can pause live TV now, but
Yeah, my dad kind of rotates through box sets, and he's kind of a big sci-fi fan. So he rotates Babylon 5, Star Trek, Buffy, Angel, Farscape, a couple of others as well. And yeah, that's kind of how he works.
Okay, Cookie, what is your favourite cartoon from your childhood?
This was tough when you asked me this, because as you've probably noticed, I watched quite a few cartoons when I was a lad, and I still do, to be fair. But I have gone with a series that actually got rebooted last year, and it was called Thundercats, yay! And it followed the survivors of Thundera, which got blown up, which were a load of cats, and you had Lino, Chitara, Pantho, Riley Cat, Snarf, who used to annoy the hell out of me.
Snarf.
That's the one. And it just followed their adventures on their new home world of Third Earth, and against their mum Ra, the ever-living, and also the mutants, which were Slythe, Monkeyan, and Jackalman. And
well remembered.
To be honest, I didn't remember much about the 80s. Well, was it 80s?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was 80s, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a classic.
It was very late 80s.
Yeah. Until I watched an episode of the new Thundercats that actually had pretty much all of the characters in.
Yeah.
And, like, the bad guys. And it's like, oh, yeah, I completely forgot about them.
What? No, it was just awesome on a Thursday afternoon on BBC One to get some mates around and sit down and watch it. And you had Chitara as well, who...
Oh, Chitara.
Yes, quite a few young lads had a crush on Chitara, bless her.
Would you say that she was the token female?
Yeah.
Look at me. I'm hardly Thundercats.
Yeah. Because Pamira didn't get introduced until the Thundercats movie. Quite late on.
I have no idea who that is.
She was a. There was three Thundercats that they found that actually survived from Third Earth as well, and they got kidnapped by Mumra or someone in the big film, and they had to go.
You could say they were strays.
Yeah, they were strays, pretty much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, and I have watched the whole series, and I actually quite enjoyed it.
Did you have any of the toys?
Oh yes. Yeah, I did have. When I was little, I was a very podgy young lad and not many friends, and I used to just play with toys most of the day.
My parents had a Thundercats towel.
They've still got it. It is lurking.
And also, just every now and again, when I sort of get a toy lightsaber or something like that, I kind of make sure that nobody's looking. Thundercats! And that's when the lightsaber extends all the way.
Sight beyond sight.
Yes. It was just a classic series, though. I always preferred Panthro's nunchucks, though. They were cool.
Yeah. He was just a better character. Lionel was just wet.
Being there, sort of. Being followed by Snarf. But Snarf wasn't as annoying in the new series.
Yeah,
he didn't say much at all. He didn't say much at all. He just sort of followed him about. Which is cool.
I mean, Cookie, you've been watching the new series as well. How do you feel about a comparison between the old Thundercats and the new Thundercats?
Basically, I think what Emily's trying to get at is who would win in a fight.
Yeah.
Oh, it would be the old Thundercats.
Which one's got the best Chitara?
Ooh.
The old one.
Oh, well, there we go. The old one, then.
The new one was good because it did... reimagine the world, and it's a bit of a darker storyline, and it's got a bit more sort of less cheese to it than the 80s, I'd say. Which was good, but the 80s one, I'll never be able to get anything better than the 80s one, because it was the original. Like so many things nowadays, you could try and emulate it, but you'll never better it.
Is there actually a box set out of the Thundercats?
Oh, yes.
I was looking at it a year or two back.
And do you have it, Cookie?
No, I don't. Not at the moment, no.
Okay.
And hopefully nobody else will be listening to this podcast. Because I have got the original Transformers, the movie from the 80s on DVD.
Oh, classic.
Oh, yes.
My dad may have that, and, you know, the awesome soundtrack. Mm. It was an awesome soundtrack.
Okay.
He's kind of metal music.
Oh, I've got that as well. Oh, yeah.
You got the touch.
You see, if they were to actually have put that kind of soundtrack in the films, I think it would have actually made it just slightly more bearable.
If they would have scrapped the modern films and then just put out Transformers the Movie Anniversary Edition,
then
it would have been much better.
Definitely.
Okay. Because I talk about Transformers. Retroid, your favourite cartoon or cartoons as you've been trying to sneak in?
Yeah, now, trust me, I've had to narrow it down from around about a dozen. Because there's stuff like G-Force, Battle of the Planets, Mysterious Cities of Gold, D'Artagnan that we've already talked about before. But the two that I'd say, which would be, you know, what I'd have to narrow it down to would be Ulysses 31 and Transformers.
Yay!
Now, the reason I say the two of them are because Transformers was the big thing for me when I was growing up. It was on TV AM, it was on Whackaday with Timmy Mallett.
Oh, I used to hate that.
Yeah.
I think everyone did. I don't know
what. Yeah, I
form of punishment for children.
He's a bit like Noel Edmonds.
Yeah. He was the price you had to pay to see part of an episode of Transformers.
Yeah.
We had a bittersweet childhood.
We did.
And they actually, if I remember rightly on Rackaday, they used to sort of give you 15-minute segments, didn't they? And then it just...
They did.
And then it would be, you'd have to wait a couple more hours for the next one, or even the full week, which used to really annoy me.
Oh, that's...
Yeah, so they chop up the episodes, and I remember I would, because they showed it quite close to the start of school, and yeah. I was only reasonably down the road from school, maybe about 5 minutes. But there were a few times where I would watch it because I knew it was a new one. And then I would have to run full pelt down to school to get there on time. That's what morning cartoons are for.
Yeah, definitely.
It was an absolutely fantastic series to watch at the time, because you've got the Autobots, you've got the Decepticons, and it was just, in a lot of ways, it was better realised than these bloody films that we've got now.
You can't beat it, can you?
Yeah. Now, the reason why I put down two is because I think Transformers, even though it was a series I loved when I was, of the age, I was in about 9 or 10 when they were on TV, I loved them, but I think if I watched them now, it would probably just be destroyed in my eyes.
A bit like me with the X-Men animated series.
Yeah, it would just be... Transformers is... I've rewatched the film, the Transformers, a movie, which does hold up relatively well, especially because it has an absolutely fantastic soundtrack.
Yeah.
And was animated in Japan, so it looks the biz as well.
Mm.
For the time. Yeah. So you've got that. But yeah, if I watched it, that would be my memories destroyed. But the other series, Ulysses 31, is one that I have watched in the years since, and it does hold up as well as I thought it would, even though it does have the... Everyone's talking very fast because we're trying to lip sync into something which is a completely different language and works in a completely different way.
It was a classic series, though.
It was. And it was just... The ones that stick in my mind are the episodes where it would be a version of a Greek myth.
Yes.
Like Sisyphus having to destroy the boulders that the gods would deposit at the top of this pit.
Yeah.
And then... As the episode went on, it turned out that the ones that he was destroying and sending down to on the middle of the pit in bits were going into a giant machine that these gods had put there,
mm-hmm.
and then being reassembled into boulders so they could be sent back to the top for him to break down, because that was his punishment. It was an eternal punishment. And there was an episode with the Minotaur in the maze.
I remember that
and,
one.
And yeah, it was just... really cool sci-fi versions of old myths. And it just worked really well. And that is a series which should really be on rotation on TV.
No, totally. Like, come on. That one. In fact, I wonder why they don't put it on Cartoon Network or something like that.
I am a bit disappointed that... I mean, okay, I get that maybe some of the sort of like subscriber channels might actually have some of the older series on repeat and stuff, but the fact that older series, like, there's hardly anything being shown on the free channels.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like, why? There are some things that aren't too, not politically correct, that are, well, they're just about okay PC wise, and they've actually got sort of more solid written stories going on, and that, and the just kids don't know about them. And the thing is, though, is that if you consider how long series used to get repeated for when we were kids, I mean, so I'm growing up in the 90s and I'm watching something like Ulysses 31, which is repeated on Channel 4, and it was made like more than 6 years ago or something before I was watching it.
I mean, an excellent example of that would be Scooby-Doo. Have you checked the copyright dates on those episodes? The original ones, before Scrappy-Doo. They were made in the 60s.
Yeah.
Wow. And I was watching them in the 80s. Mm-hmm. So it's like, come on, that's 20-odd years.
Well, I mean, Tom and Jerry used to get repeated, all the time. The originals, not the new ones they've done, but like the original cartoons, a proper sort of... what was the name of the studio? Metro... Was it... Were they with...
Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer.
Were they with MGM? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Proper those ones, not the ones before, because Warner got hold of them at one point. There used to be lots of repeats of that. Obviously, Flintstones, Jetsons, all the Hanna-Barbera stuff. You just don't get that anymore. Heck, there used to be repeats of still animations from over here, even when, you know, Bagpuss used to get repeat when I was a kid. Thingy Green, Camberwick?
Yeah, Camberwick Green.
Yeah, used to get repeated. Or the Herb Garden.
Trimpton.
Or the Wombles. Yeah. And these are theories that when I was watching them were definitely, like I said, you know, at least 6, if not 10, certainly probably in a lot of cases more than 10 years older than myself. And they would be repeated. And they were actually quite well written and stuff, you know. I mean, I won't say they're not necessarily cheesy, but they were pretty well written. And kids just aren't seeing this stuff today. And they weren't exactly contextually relevant to me when they repeated when I was a kid. But at the same time, they were still entertaining, and it's the fact that you've got kids now that, in a way, are losing out on a piece of animation history because they don't get shown old things.
You know, what would be awesome is if we do a Kickstarter to actually make a nerd podcast channel, right? Have all these, you know, brilliant cartoons on in the morning, sci-fi in the afternoon.
Mm.
What do you think?
That would be quite
cool. Oh, yeah.
Probably get cost a fortune to do, though. I would hate to think how much we'd have to pay to get the signal channel for something like that, and then the rights to things.
Sure, you could do it.
The place on the EPG, and that would probably just be on Sky.
Yeah.
It would cost a fortune, I swear.
Oh. It does make me wonder how Dave actually got started on Freeview.
And stuff like that. But, I mean, going back to my, basically, we've got kids today. That I'm not saying that the old stuff is necessarily better than current stuff. There are some current things that are actually quite well made. It's just the fact that they're going to have issues communicating with anyone basically from our age. And we're not, well, I say our age, I'm thinking my age, being 26, and anyone in their 20s onwards, because they won't have been exposed to any older texts.
It's like, come on, there's a rich history there, and we've got more hours of TV channels to fill than ever before.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, I'm not saying that you necessarily have to go back as far as something like Watch With Mother or something like that, but there's stuff basically from the late 70s, certainly onwards, that I think it'd be worth sharing with younger kids, basically.
I suppose that's the advantage going back to box sets, of actually buying box sets like this. Because, I mean, we bought for your little brother The Trapdoor.
Yeah, we bought him Trapdoor for his birthday this year. He absolutely loved it.
Fantastic.
Brings a tear to your eye.
Yeah, it brings tears to my eye. And he's also my parents, because the fact that they've got to put up with this stuff on when he's watching it. They have bought him, like, the older Tom and Jerry cartoons on box set.
Excellent.
So what I'm trying to say is, now that we've had this lovely discussion about cartoon series that we like, that basically, sure, these are all things that we watched when we were kids, but other kids are being denied the opportunity to watch them as well.
And it's not all rose-tinted nostalgia, is it? Because there's some stuff which is, it's just, it's classic.
Yes.
It's almost timeless. And then there are others which are, let's just completely ignore about 70% of whatever there was. But the 30% or so that you're left with, gold.
It's the kids' TV equivalent of something like Lawrence of Arabia or Casanova or Ben-Hur or something. It's classic stuff that actually, if you want to get a grounding in past experiences, and also perhaps experience some pretty reasonable drama and narration, it is actually worth experiencing.
I have to say, I mean, what do you think is the reason why we can't actually produce the same quality nowadays? Do you think it's the writing?
I would say it's partly budgets. I mean, if you consider the fact that the Top Cat movie that was made recently was completely made in, I believe, Mexico, really cheap budget. The whole thing's just stinkingly cheap. The quality of writing is nothing on par with the original cartoon series. I would say that's part of the problem is money, because, I mean, if you think about it, the a lot of the franchises are owned by big companies now who have got shareholders and whatnot to answer to, and that is perhaps part of the problem is the shareholders. It's gone beyond the whole, oh, we need to sell a toy franchise. Now we need to keep shareholders happy.
Which, incidentally, toys were the only reason that the Transformers cartoon series ever existed.
Yeah. And He-Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of them.
It was, we want, basically, adverts.
Yeah. And it worked really well, to be fair.
I mean,
it did.
I mean, there are...
It worked on me.
There is some current stuff that is quite good. I've watched a bit of Ben 10. Okay, let's say current. It's a couple of years old now.
My nephew is big into his Ben 10.
I would say that the original animated series that they did of that was actually pretty good. I'm just trying to think of newer things that I've seen bits and pieces of.
No, actually, Young Justice was quite good. Avengers is good.
Mm. There's a lot of remakes and rehashes and reimaginings nowadays of like older stuff.
There is. Yeah, there's a new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles one on Nickelodeon that should be shot. Castellated and burnt to the ground.
I'm wondering if that's the last one I thought the same about, where it shouldn't be, or whether there's been another one since then. No, just every time I turn around, there seems to be a, what they're doing, what?
Yeah, there's a new one about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
A couple of months ago.
And I was just about to say, of course, with the issue of Teenage Mutant Ninja Hero Turtles, or whatever you want to call them, is the fact that they're nothing like the original comics that they're based on.
But the original 80s, 90s cartoon was all right. That was quite good fun.
I remember I had some of my cousins were really into Turtles.
Mm.
Toys and stuff they'd record off TV kind of situation.
At this point, I'll just casually mention I happen to own the arcade cabinet of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
That's it.
Party at yours.
I think on that note, that we're going to have to call it a night. So it is good night from...
That's Retroid on Eurogamer.net or Super Retroid on Twitter.
And it's good night from me, Paul, one-armed cookie, which is one_armed_cookie on Twitter. And you can find me lurking around thegamejar.com.
It's good night from me. I'm Paul Blewett. Website paul-blewett.com. Mostly do my editing stuff. And I have a Twitter, Paul Blewett.
And it's good night from me, Emily. You can find me on Twitter at ek6891. And you can also find me on my website, ek-creations.com. You also find everything Nerd Assemble at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. And we're also lurking on Games Fiends these days, which is www.gamesfiends.com. We've got a Twitter, which is at Nerds Podcast. We're on Facebook at Nerds Assemble Podcast. We're on Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. I think that's everywhere we're at. Except for here right now. I'm not sure. But it's good night.
Good night.
Good night.